This is episode 160 on May 5th, 2016.
Set your photo apps down, iPhone photographers. It's time for Tiny Shutter Podcast.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Tiny Shutter Podcast, where we talk about iPhones and other things. iPhone photography. I'm Joseph Ferreira.
And I am Matt Hoffman.
And if you can't tell, I'm a little frustrated, but that's all right. The saga continues with my computer, but we are doing this. How are you doing, man?
I am doing well, Joe. Yeah. Sorry to hear you're having so much troubles.
Well, that's all right. I bought another computer, and now I have to configure it, and it's actually much nicer. The one I'm using right now is a 17-inch laptop, and then the other one is a 11-inch with that you can also turn it into a tablet. But it has a solid-state drive, which means no fans. And I'm looking forward to that. But, you know, it just trying to get things going has been a little frustrating. We started a little later today. But how was your trip, man?
Oh, yeah, that was good. you know, it's funny. People have been asking me about it all week and, like, asking me if it was fun. And I don't know if fun is like the right word to describe it, but just in case anyone doesn't know, last weekend I kayaked 50 miles down a river in Michigan, and it was part of an event. It was a challenge, right? And that's what I've been explaining to people is that I didn't sign up and I didn't go to this thing because I thought it was going to be fun.
Yeah,
I was hoping it would be fun, but I did it because it was a challenge, and I just wanted to see if I could do it.
Oh, cool!
And it turned out that the only thing that really made it difficult was just that it's such a long day. It's like a long time to sit in a kayak. It took me from the time I left to the time I got to the end, it took me 11 hours and 30 minutes.
Oh, man.
And I would say, like, probably about 10 hours of that was, like, actually kayaking. And then maybe another, like, hour and a half was spent out of the kayak, like, you know, getting around. There were three dams that we had to get around. And probably with about 12 miles left, I got out of the kayak again to stretch and everything, because I've been having some, like, lower back issues off and on lately. And, you know, I was definitely feeling it. And I had some other aches and pains. My shoulders and my neck got really sore. And I'm guessing maybe it was just because that was the first time I'd been in my kayak this year.
Okay.
So maybe 50 miles is not a good thing to do right off the bat, but, you know, the river had like a good current. It wasn't like super fast or anything. I definitely had to paddle like the entire time. Mm. And because of that, I didn't really get to take too many pictures, which kind of stinks.
Yeah.
You know, but when I like think back like to the scenery and everything, like there was definitely a variety of scenery. You know, we passed through everything from urban areas to wilderness. Like the river flowed right through downtown Lansing, Michigan, which is, you know, the capital of Michigan. And, you know, and then towards the end, we were in some sort of, game, I don't know what you call it, like a wildlife area.
Oh yeah. Basically. Reserve.
You know, there was, a game preserve, something to that effect. You know, so there was nothing along the river, you know, it just felt like you were kind of in the wilderness. And, but, you know, there was over 50 miles, like it starts to all kind of look the same, you know? So it's like, I only probably would have taken so many pictures anyway, because, you know, it's just, you go around the bend and, you know, it just looks the same as where you were, you know, an hour before.
Let me ask you this.
Not to say that it wasn't interesting. It was really pretty. The river was pretty. It was clear, which was surprising because it had rained a ton the few days leading up to last weekend, and it was relatively shallow. You could see the bottom in a lot of it.
Wow.
I did see a little bit of wildlife. I think I saw a mink or something to that effect. I saw some sort of weasel-like critter. And then I saw a pair of eagles, bald eagles, in their nest, which was pretty cool.
Wow.
And then just a ton of different birds, all kinds of warblers and, I don't know, different birds and stuff. That was pretty neat. And saw a deer, which wasn't, like, that exciting because I see deer, like, several times a week here at home. But it's nice to see things, you know, when you're out kayaking. And one town we passed through had an event going on called Victoria Days. And it was funny because, you know, I didn't really know that that was happening. So I'm going down the river. I'm approaching this town, and I could see these three women, like, way up the bank, like, out on this street walking along. And they're in these, like, huge, giant hoop skirts. And I was like, what in the world? What's going on there? And then I get a little further down kind of into this town, and I see this guy walking along, and he's got this, like, this black jacket on with, like, the long tails in the back, and he's got this big black top hat on. And I'm just like, wow, what in the world? This is crazy. People are in costume here. And then we kind of went by this island in the river, and there was, like, a bridge, like a walking path that went from the shore out over to this island. And then the island itself was kind of long. It was probably several hundred yards long, and all down this island, it was like a Civil War camp. Actually, Joe, you would have loved it.
Oh, absolutely.
It was like these, you know, burlap tents and all these, like, men and boys in these Civil War, military outfits. And they had these, like, smoldering campfires with a iron kettle or an iron pot, hanging over it.
Good.
Oh, it was so cool. It was really, really cool. And I'm just floating by, just taking it all in. And I was like, this is pretty sweet. You know, I wish I could have taken more pictures, but it just proved to be a little too, like, cumbersome kind of to get my Sony camera, like, in and out of the bag all the time to take pictures. And then my iPhone, I didn't want to take it out of the little waterproof bag that I got for it. So I didn't use my stylus lenses at all.
Right.
It was mostly just out of, like, paranoia that I would drop the phone into the river.
It's actually smart.
Yeah. And then, I took some pictures, but it was really frustrating to use that bag. Like, you know, they all advertise, like, how easy it is to use the phone, you know, even though it's in that bag, like, you know, your touch screen still works and everything, but it actually was quite frustrating. And after a while, I just was like, you know what, this stinks. It's not even worth it.
Next time you go, are you going to bring any of that stuff, or are you going to leave it all?
Well, next time. So I've been thinking a lot about whether or not I'm going to do this event again. I might. And I've actually been thinking about making it harder on myself and doing it on a paddleboard.
Oh, nice.
Or it maybe the next time I go, maybe I'll have a canoe, in which case then I would probably do it with somebody else, like, in the canoe with me, and then I'd be able to spend a ton of time taking pictures.
Yes. So it wasn't just wasn't kayaks. It was anything like canoes or paddle boards and all that?
As far as I know, nobody did the event on a paddle board, but there was many, many, many canoes.
Oh, okay.
There wasn't as many people doing the 50-mile trip. Actually, a lot of people did a 25-mile version of the trip. So at, like, my halfway point is where, I guess, a bulk of the people that participated, that's where they started.
Oh, so, wow. Okay.
I literally only saw, like, a handful of people, like, out on the water, like, the whole day.
Okay.
And the canoes were faster than me because, you know, they had multiple people in the canoe, so they were cruising down the river pretty good.
Did they have to carry the canoes around the dams?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. you know, and I was with two other people and we all had kayaks. And so like our portages took forever because our kayaks weighed a ton with all of our food and water and stuff. So it took two of us to carry one kayak. So we would have to make three trips back and forth.
Got it.
And it, you know, it took a lot longer, but, all in all, it was definitely a worthwhile adventure.
That's good. Yeah. It's hard to plan, especially with something you haven't done before, but you know, what kind of gear do you want to bring? What do you think you'll be using? And then it seems like you said, you didn't do a whole lot, mainly because you had to get from point A to point B, and pulling out a camera or the iPhone proved to be too much for the trip. So, you know, a lot of times, you know, we'll do that. It doesn't have to be a trip like that, but you know, you go on a car trip somewhere. If you're driving and you're the one that takes photos, it's hard to actually, it's probably not safe to take pictures while you're driving, let alone let somebody else drive. That's my feelings. But
So I do have some ideas, though, for the next time I do something like this that okay. I really honestly wish I would have thought of before this trip. But, you know, I've noticed, like, on Facebook, the whole like live streaming thing to be gaining popularity. I have like a handful of friends that, you know, have been live streaming on their vacation or whatever. And, you know, I'm pretty sure I didn't like look at my phone like too much during this trip, but every time I stopped, I noticed, you know, I had full service. So like, I'm thinking like next time I do something like this, that maybe I'll get a different case. Like maybe I'll spring for a life-proof case or something like that, you know, to keep my phone waterproof but still relatively usable. And, you know, I could live stream like little updates or whatever, you know, on Facebook and kind of be like, hey, this is the cool thing I'm doing and this is where I'm at. And, you know, that would have been kind of neat to do on this past trip for sure.
Yeah.
So like Dave in the chat room was asking me a little earlier, you know, if I was planning any other event or he just asked me how this went and I told him that it was great and I wasn't, feeling sore or anything like that. And I'm already plotting and scheming the next adventure, which is going to happen, I think, right around the second week of June or so. And, it's going to be out in Lake Erie and, we're going to paddle from these islands that are like part of Ohio, but we're going to paddle to an island that is technically in Canada. It's called Pelee Island. Maybe I could get Greg McMillan to meet me there.
There you go.
in any case, it's like a 6.5 to 7 mile like open water crossing on Lake Erie.
Wow.
And that might prove to be pretty epic. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. It's exciting to do adventures. It's really fun to capture them, but it's not always a possibility or, you know, an option, but you know, it's like, I guess it just takes doing it and going out and then figuring out what you want. You'll probably take less gear the next time because pack in, pack out, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole like live streaming thing or even like, you know, self portraits or selfies or whatever you want to call it, that'd be totally possible for me to do in my kayak because I actually installed.
You got a mount?
I basically have a mount, yes, on my kayak. I actually have two mounts for different angles, but there's only one that would be practical for me to use for a camera where I would be able to control it. I have another mount that's way up at the bow of the kayak that would be something where I could maybe have like somebody else hit the button for me.
Yeah.
And they would get like an even wider view, you know, and see more of my kayak and more of the scenery around me and stuff. But yeah. Probably I'd just use the mount that I have a little bit closer to me so that I could reach my phone and, you know, tap on the screen to start and stop everything.
Very cool.
Yeah. So giving it a lot of thought, and I think it'd be fun to do.
Nice. Very cool. All right. Well, awesome. I'm glad you made it through all right. And you know, it's fun to hear those types of adventures. You know, I'm more of the hiking type, but I haven't done a whole lot of waterway adventures, but one of these days I might do it. All right. Well, I think we should go ahead and move right into our focus point.
Focus point.
All right. We had a question come up in our Facebook group, and I thought it was a perfect opportunity to review the question and see if we can answer it and give our fellow photographer some good advice. So, Matt, do you have that readily available to read?
I do.
All right. Why don't you go ahead and read
it? All right. So we have somebody in our Facebook group that is in sort of a conundrum. And I'm going to ad-lib their post ever so slightly.
Yeah.
But this is from Ben M. Powell, and he says, "I'm looking for some advice. All I use is my iPhone for pictures. Over the years, I've created a hobby of taking mostly sunset pictures since I live in the Tampa Bay area. I have some friends that seem to think that since I take decent landscape photos, that my talent would spill over as well into taking pictures of people. My friends in question are a beautiful family. Although I have tried my best to tell them I am not a professional by a long shot and only shoot landscapes with an iPhone, they are insisting I take some pics of their family in the outdoors. My question is this. I have a place chosen, but unsure of the best time of day for the lighting. They want the pictures in the morning. The pictures will be taken with a gorgeous lake in the background. At this positioning, the family and the lake will be facing west, so the sun will be coming up from the east, shining down on them. Is there a certain time of the morning that's best? My concern is that the sun will be too bright and they will be squinting their eyes as they're focusing on me taking their picture with the iPhone. I was just wondering if somebody might be able to give me some good advice regarding time of day, lighting, shadows, etc. Thanks so much." Wow. So kind of a situation that I'm sure a lot of people find themselves in, that, you know, take really nice pictures in one genre of photography and then get asked to do something that's a little outside of their comfort zone, you know, or like what they normally do. And there's, you know, he's got a lot going on in this question, but I thought this would be a great thing to talk about on the show because, you know, we talk about the iPhone a lot. We talk about apps. We talk about printing. We don't actually talk about photography, I think, as much as we probably should. So this definitely gives us an opportunity to do that and address some of these concerns as best as we can.
Yeah, it is a nerve-wracking, which I imagine Ben is kind of feeling right now. But the best thing to do is to try to relax and, you know, get the images as best as you can. A couple of things that I noticed right offhand that I was a little concerned over was he said that the family and the lake will be facing the west, but the sun will be rising in the east. Does that mean the sun's coming up behind them or in front of them?
Behind them.
So
yeah.
It's possible that, you know, with the sun coming straight up behind them, you know, what are the shadows going to do to the, them in front of them, and or is the image, are you going to be able to expose for the front and then the back is going to be washed out? So, you know, that's something to kind of consider. And I'd probably tomorrow morning would try to get out and practice, I guess, shooting against the sun and trying things like that. He did message us and say, oh, this is going to happen Saturday, which is in 2 days, which means he's got a short order of things to do. The other thing that I, you know, thought was, okay, if the sun was coming up to be in front of them, if it's on the horizon, that means his shadow would be cast on them, which would cause an issue. And then he, you know, so it's just, it's almost like he needs somebody else there that could possibly redirect some sunlight onto them, or with a reflector, or something to be able to keep his shadow from being cast upon them. What are some of the things that you saw?
All right. Well, I have a lot of thoughts about this. So first thing first, I would say, if you're approached to do something like this, let's just say all of us are in the same boat. We all take landscape pictures, and that's what we like to do, and that's what we excel at. And then we're asked by a friend to take a picture of them and their family. And it's hard to turn down a friend, you know. Yeah. You want to do them a favor and everything. And but if you're just really not comfortable doing it, then you should say no. But, you know, you should at least be able to explain why you're saying no. And he, it sounds like he attempted to do that. You know, I'm not a portrait photographer. I'm a landscape photographer. You know, I mean, there's really not much more you could say about it other than that. As if he does agree to take the pictures, I'm going to assume that the only gear that he has is the iPhone.
That's what I'm assuming too.
So, you know, so I'm going to take out of the equation things like reflectors and stuff like that. And the way that I read it is that basically the sun would be behind them. And, you know, it's going to be morning, so I don't know what time in the morning, but, you know, the sun might be high enough that it won't be, like, in the picture, you know, by the time they do these pictures. But I actually think that, like, backlit portraits are some of the most beautiful types of pictures. I really, like, in wedding photography,
yeah.
You see it a lot where, you know, the most important thing is, you know, exposing, making sure the bride's face, for instance, is exposed correctly. And if there's light behind her, let's say she's standing in a church and a church window is behind her or something. Well, you know, you're not going to do what the camera says and expose for like the church window, because then the bride and everything else is going to be too dark. So, you know, you have to, you know, get the right exposure for the bride. She's going to look great, but that window, you're not going to be able to see any detail. It's just going to be a white blob. And that's kind of going to be the same situation in this case too. The background's not important. I know they're doing it at a lake and they probably want to see the lake, but really the portrait is about the family. It's not really about the lake. It's not about whatever's in the background. So I would just, you know, use an app like, you could use the native app or Camera Plus or any app that lets you adjust the exposure, and just make sure you're getting, you know, the family exposed properly and not worry too much about the, you know, what the background's doing.
Yeah.
Another thing to do is, if you have the means to put the phone on a tripod, I would recommend doing that. And then what you could do is, this is a little bit more work, but you could get your picture of your of the family, then have them leave the scene, and then use a different app like Vivid HDR or something like that to get an HDR shot of just the background, and then blend those two together. You know, so that's another idea.
Without moving the tripod.
Without moving the tripod. And then the other thing that I wanted to say about this too is that it would really be best to be flexible in like where you take the pictures. Now, it's okay to have a location in mind, but if you had like just a specific spot where you want to put the family, that might not be the best idea, especially if, you know, the sun's really bright and you do get those harsh shadows. On what you want to try to do is get the family as evenly lit as you possibly can, so that you kind of take away all those shadows. So, some ideas would be to put them under the shade of a tree. If there's like a pavilion, maybe have them, you know, right at the edge of the pavilion, but so that they're shaded by the pavilion, and that will just give, you know, even lighting on them. You don't have to worry about any crazy shadows on their faces or anything like that. And then, you know, the background is just going to do what it does. It's probably not going to have a lot of detail. It'll be really bright. You know, but I think that will make a lot better picture. It's certainly going to be better than having like really dark, harsh shadows on the family.
Yeah. Another thing to keep in mind is you can't control the weather. You can plan on being there for sunrise, but what happens is a lot of times a marine layer, especially if you're on the coast somewhere, will come in and blanket the area with clouds. So I took a trip to San Francisco and was like fully intent on getting pictures of the Golden Gate and of the city. Well, we got there and the fog had just rolled in and it was like foggy the whole time. So we said, all right, we're going, we have to get back. And as we're heading back across the bridge, right about the halfway mark is when the fog dissipated and all of a sudden it was a beautiful day. And we're like, oh, we can't stop and get some pictures like we wanted. And we couldn't help it. So, you know, maybe think of an area that you can go that is beautiful, that doesn't need the sun. Because most of the time, a cloudy day is the best day for getting pictures. Because the clouds will dissipate the sun light and be able to, it's pretty much a giant softbox, and most photographers love cloudy days because then they're not having to fight the shadows. Another thing too is see if there is a local garden or maybe a really nice building or, you know, some sort of a tourist house that you can take them to and get those pictures there too. If you just depend on one location, if the weather doesn't work out or say there's an event that is going on and, you know, you could have boaters in the background, you could have people, you know, setting up a party, that type of stuff will get in the way of the image. So having a alternative, maybe one or two different alternatives to say, hey, listen, it's not going to work here, but I have a great idea for another location. Let's go over there. And, you know, that way they're not stressing. They're not thinking, oh, we got up real early, drove all this way for nothing. You're able to provide alternatives for the location.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely good advice. The clouds are probably not going to be an issue for this gentleman. I checked the weather for his location, and it's like 100% sun.
Nice, beautiful.
Yeah. I am a little like confused as to exactly what direction the family's going to be facing.
Yeah.
You know, he does say that the family will be facing west, which to me would mean if the pictures are going to be in the morning time, the sun would be behind them. But then he says he's concerned that the, that they'll be squinting their eyes, focusing on him. And again, you know, placing them in the shade will certainly eliminate the squinting.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's really like a lot of photographers that do like wedding photography and portraiture and stuff, they call it open shade. So like, you know, like the shade under a big tree.
Yeah.
Even the shade in a like an open air pavilion, you know, it's still there's still enough light in there that you don't have to use like some crazy long exposure or whatever to get your picture. You know, it just knocks down all the shadows, you know, evens out the light tremendously.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a. I'm not saying that that this is going to be easy, you know, but it, I don't know. I mean, I think if you're into photography and no matter what you do, I mean, I think it's good to, you know, kind of embrace all forms of photography. And
absolutely,
you know, if you explain, you know, to the family that, you know, look, you don't normally take pictures of people. You don't know a lot about posing and that kind of thing, you know, and you know, you can always ask them to, you know, for their ideas and to help with the posing and stuff. And you know, I'm sure they'll be understandable if they don't get, you know, 100% like the best picture ever, but you know, you might surprise yourself too and find that maybe you got a knack for taking pictures of families and people as well. So
yeah, first times are always the scariest, but it, you know, like what we do with our weekly photo challenges is we have to try stuff that we're not used to or we're uncomfortable with. And, you know, if this was, say, a professional shoot, now is not the time to try to figure that stuff out. it's the little things, the you know, requests by friends, those types of things that are good opportunities to try new things, learn something. I guarantee you, Ben's going to walk away from this saying, okay, I'm not going to do this, this, and this, but I am going to do this, and be able to have that in his tool belt for the next time. And you know, I don't know if there is a whole lot of things that we can say or do to prepare him without. Having, I would say his best preparation is to go out and do this and keep doing it. I'll probably work with somebody who has done it before and learn from them the ropes and be able to apply it to his own work. He has to, I encourage him to, go out there and do it to the best of your ability, and send some pics our way. We want to see how it turned out and what your thoughts were after the whole ordeal.
I have one last suggestion.
Go for it.
Assuming that shadows on the people are unavoidable, use your flash.
Yeah.
And that will help fill in some of those shadows.
Yep. Yeah, we had the chat room had a lot of things that they were throwing our way, you know. Let's see here. Janine was talking about using reflectors. She even mentioned that sometimes our car shades that we have in our front windshield can be used as a reflector or not so much a diffuser, but maybe a way to cast shadow The other thing is Dave said that sometimes the tree lines can act as a screen. He also says that take lots of pictures, digital. It's not like film, where it costs a whole lot of money. Just get those shots and then review those. Review your work and look at the ones you like. Look at the ones you don't like, and start to critique your own work and be able to, recognize what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, definitely.
So, I'm gonna play this real quick.
This is a great shot, Mav. I should be a photographer.
That's right. Oh, very cool. I tell you what, the photo shoots that make me the most nervous are typically the ones that give me the most satisfaction. And if we just stick to what we like and do, after a while it gets a little boring. So go out there and do something you haven't done before. Push yourself to the limit, and I guarantee you, you're going to have fun.
I never get bored taking pictures of landscapes.
Oh, yeah.
No, seriously, I hope that we had some helpful information, and hopefully it helps make this a little bit easier.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And if you guys have any suggestions, feel free to post them in our Facebook group and give us your recommendations, tell us your war stories, and post images of things that you thought you'd never be able to do, yet you turn around and you have some great images. I really encourage you guys to do that. All right, you ready for some post pick of the week?
I was born ready.
All right. All right, this last week's weekly photo challenge was motion, and I think that was probably one of our more difficult ones, and it was probably one we'll have to bring back again and try it again. But we had some images that were submitted, and it is Matt's turn to pick our winner.
All righty. Yeah, this was a more difficult challenge, I think, than I thought it would be. And I forget who came up with this idea last week. Was it Matt DeVore?
I think it was. We'll blame him.
I think it was. But even though he came up with the idea, I had expectations, I think, for this. there was like certain things I was looking for, like, just give you some examples.
Well, you posted a pretty good image that I thought we would get a lot of.
Yeah, I kind of posted it right away as an example, I suppose. So I had a shot where it was a friend of mine on a motorcycle. And they weren't going real fast. They were probably only going like 15 miles an hour, 20 miles an hour or something. But I just followed them with the phone as I, hit the shutter button. And the trick with panning with motion is even after you hit the shutter button to keep the camera moving along with them. Right. Yeah. So, the shutter speed was just slow enough that it kind of blurred the background, so it it definitely gives it that sense of motion that they're on this motorcycle and they're moving along, and I was able to track them with the phone good enough that they're relatively sharp. The two people on the motorcycle are relatively sharp, but the background's all blurred. Panning is something that really takes a lot of practice. It's really kind of a hit or miss thing. But once you've done it enough, it's it's not too hard to do.
Can I say, I want to say something real quick. When you mentioned that technique, it reminded me, I do some, what's it called? I do some shooting, sports, and one of them that I like doing
trap shooting or skeet shooting. Gotcha.
And one of the things that we were taught with skeet is that once you pull the trigger, doesn't mean you stop. If you stop, you're going to miss the shot, which also applies to what you just said, is to keep that follow through. Just because you press the shutter button doesn't mean that the entire shot has been taken. Follow through with it, or you will miss the shot. The one thing about the shooting the shotgun was when you pull the trigger, if you were to just stop, the barrel stops, which means the shot that coming out of it will go only in that direction. But when you follow through, the shot will continue to follow through all the way to your target. So the same thing with photographing a moving object is to follow through even after you have pressed the shutter button to continue, just in case those last bits of pixels were not yet captured yet. So always remember, follow through on your shot.
Yeah, that's very good advice. There was a few other things that I was kind of hoping to see in this. What's that?
I just saw. I saw that in the just saw what you were replying to in the chat room.
panning with HDR.
Yeah, Matt DeVore said panning with HDR is bad. That's awesome. All right, go ahead.
I thought that we would see like more photos kind of done with like slow shutter cam or something.
Yeah.
But I don't think we got a lot of that.
Actually, I think a couple waterfalls, but
yeah. And then another idea, cause we didn't specify, there wasn't like a whole ton of criteria, right?
It's just
you can kind of convey motion in several ways. One would be to have something blurred in the picture, but then another way too is to show something that is readily recognizable as something that is usually in fast motion, but to show it frozen. Like, think like a water drop, like as it just dropped off, the kitchen faucet or something to that effect, you know? So I think we're going to come back to this challenge again at some point in the future.
Yes.
But that being said, I do have a winner, and it is Melissa Moreland. She actually had two posts, and I like them both. And she actually kind of showed really the two different types of motion that I was just talking about. She had one photo of a pigeon, and the wings, it's a pigeon and it's flying, and the wings are blurred, but it's almost sharp. But there's just enough blur to the wings that you could tell that it's flapping its wings. But the photo I picked as the winner, she's on a bridge over a highway, and she got, the cars nice and blurred, and the highway and all the scenery around it's nice and sharp. She did this in black and white, and there's like a puffy white clouds, and the sky is nice and it was obviously a very blue sky, and
nice
she
contrast.
Got it like nice dark, like black. Yeah, it's really high contrast. I like the shot a lot. So yeah, something's going by, like a semi truck or something is going by. It would kind of be in the foreground on the highway, and it's very blurred.
I think it would be called a lorry, because I believe Melissa's in the UK. I love the shot too. I think especially a shot like this. What's that? Oh, I think I lost Matt. The shot like this I would do is probably a slow shutter cam and get a deserted highway. That would be another fun shot to get, but it is good. I like that. The road flows, the vehicles flow, and then the scenery is beautiful. So yeah, it is a great image. So congratulations, Melissa, on your post pick of the week. And we will feature that as our, I can't even talk. We'll feature that on Facebook as the cover photo, but then also it'll be the album art for our episode. So very cool. Good choice. All right. Now we need to try and figure out what we're going to do this week. And I had asked the chat room to come up with some suggestions. And I think we should take a look. I think there was one that was, let's see here. Scroll. Oh, here we go. Let's see here. Double exposure. There was water.
I'm a huge fan of double exposure.
All right, done. We'll do double exposure. Janine had suggested that one, so yep. What apps do you suggest for double exposure? Would Nlight be a good one?
Yeah, Nlight's a fabulous one. There's another app called Diana.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah, that's an oldie but a goodie for double exposure. Let's see. I'm looking through my phone here to see what else I have that does double exposure. Really just about any app that you could work in layers. Oh, another good one is called Union.
Yes.
Yeah, I would say for me it'd be Nlight, Union, and Diana are the apps that I would definitely go to for creating double exposures.
Very good. Yeah, I will have links in the show notes. So if you are looking for it, you can't find it in iTunes or the app store, go to the show notes. We'll have a link to it and you can download it. All right. Well, I think, let me pull this up. I think we're done. Do we have anything else?
No, this week, I think we are done.
All right. Let me play this.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
All right, Matt, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you?
All right, you can check me out on Instagram. I am Twitter and Flickr at M. Hoffman Photo.
Awesome. You can find me on Instagram at Joseph Ferreira. You can find me on Facebook in the group, the Facebook group that we have. You can find the links to the Facebook group, to Flickr, the show notes, and our email address if you have any questions or comments by going to tinyshutter.com. And like Mark said last week, if you have a chance and are willing, please go on to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. Tell us what you like taking pictures of, or what you like about the show, we can really use that help and be able to put more eyeballs on our show. We have been getting a lot of people coming to our Facebook group and joining and participating, and we've had some wonderful images, a lot of good suggestions, a lot of good questions, and it is a great place for us to be able to come together and have a virtual camera club. This is a lot of fun to do. So be sure to go to tinyshutter.com, go to iTunes, and leave us a 5-star review, and we'd appreciate it much. All right, I think we are done. We made it through. Let me just say, good show, Matt.
You too, Joe. Glad the computer lived.
Yeah, I think I have a battle plan now. I'm going to take my old computer and then set it side by side with the new one and try to match up all the settings. And hopefully I'll be able to destroy this beast. But not to destroy it completely. But all right, man. You have a wonderful week, and I will see you later. Say goodbye.
All right, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, head over to iTunes and leave us a review and a 5-star rating. See you next week.
Everything's perfectly all right now. We're fine. We're all fine here now. Thank you. How are you?
Kowalski, what's our trajectory?
95% certain this will end in massive, flaming disaster.
And the other 5%?
Irrelevant, sir.
Check, check, and check.